I'm Chris Sims.
And I'm Todd McKay.
This is the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. We're dedicated to lower taxes, less waste, and more accountable government. In this episode, we'll take a deep dive into Canada's carbon tax hike, because those taxes are going in another direction in other countries. And we've got a Waste Watch story about government office ghost towns that you are still paying for.
It's always weird when governments are charging taxpayers for things they're not doing.
Yes.
So stick around for that. But first, gas prices are going down across the country, but half of the price you pay at the pump is still tax. It's around this time of year, the May long weekend, when we usually have big press conferences in front of gas stations showing drivers how much they're paying in tax. This year, of course, because of COVID-19, we're not doing a lot of press conferences, but Canadians still need to know what they're paying for at the pump. Our Gas Tax Honesty Day report is on our website. We break down the gas taxes across Canada. And Chris, in BC, you feel the pain like almost nobody else across Canada. You've got some of the highest fuel taxes in the country.
We really do. Here in the Fraser Valley where I live, gas is about $1.02, between $1.08 per liter right now. In Vancouver, it's much more. We've got the highest pump prices and some of the highest taxes. Vancouver drivers, for example, they pay 51 cents per liter in taxes. Victoria drivers over on Vancouver Island, they pay about 44 cents a liter in taxes. It really is one of the major reasons why we've got a super high cost of living out here on the West Coast.
Yeah, it's a little bit different in my neck of the woods. In Manitoba, it's about 32 cents per liter of tax on gas. In Alberta, it's about 33 cents a liter. But one of the problems with gas taxes is that they're not very transparent. When you buy just about anything else, you can see the taxes right there. Here's what your GST is. Here's what your PST is. Here's what your HST is, depending on where you are. But governments really like to hide the fact that drivers are paying a whole list of taxes when they buy gas. You're paying carbon taxes, you're paying excise taxes, transit taxes, sales taxes, the list goes on, but you don't get to see that list.
Yes, exactly. We hear from people all the time. They're either emailing us directly at the Taxpayers Federation, or I hear them on talk radio, and they can't figure out why gas prices are so high in Vancouver, for example. Well, Vancouver drivers pay 18.5 cents per liter just for the TransLink tax. Then they pay 8.9 cents per liter for the provincial BC carbon tax. It's one of the reasons why we're topping the charts here.
And here's the thing that just grates people. It just drives them crazy when they find out about it. You're not just paying tax for the price of fuel. You're also paying taxes on the taxes on fuel. So the government takes all of those other taxes, excise taxes, carbon taxes, all of those other taxes. And on top of all of that, it charges the sales tax. It's a tax on tax. It drives people crazy.
Bingo. It's just gross. If this is really one of the major things that people email me about most consistently, it's as if they find it out on their own and they realize it and they say, wait a minute, why am I being charged a tax on tax? This is completely unfair. And just to give you an example, an average fill up in Ontario for about 60 liters, 65 liters or so on a vehicle, drivers are handing over more than $25 for that fill up just in taxes. And more than $2.50 of that is the tax on tax. When you think about it, you could get a really nice loaf of bread for that $2.50 instead of paying a tax on tax.
I get a lot of emails about that too. People saying, isn't it illegal to charge a tax on a tax? My only response is it should be, and we're working on it. Because listen, every dollar counts, especially right now. Not only is government needlessly slapping a tax on top of another tax, but is super sneaky about it. Most Canadians don't know that they're paying almost half of their bill at the pump is tax. They just pay for it. And they don't realize that they're paying taxes on top of taxes. And that's why we do the Gas Tax Honesty Day stunts every year. That's why we put out the Gas Tax Honesty Day report. Because honestly, taxpayers need to know that they're getting hosed at the pump. So if you want to know more about this, check out taxpayer.com. Check out our show notes. We're going to have links to our Gas Tax Honesty Day report, because you need to know how much tax you're paying when you fill up.
Coming up next, carbon taxes are going up in Canada, but Alberta Director Franco Terrazano takes us on a deep dive into what's happening in the rest of the world. Stay with us.
time for our deep dive. This is a part of the show where we get deeper into important issues. We've got Alberta Canadian Taxpayer Federation Director Franco Terrazano here, and he's going to tell us about the carbon tax, how that's playing out around the world. Franco, what do you have for us today?
Well, Todd, you know how Prime Minister Justin Trudeau tells us that carbon taxes are going to save the planet? But that's not what the World Bank data is telling us.
Somebody thinks the Prime Minister's wrong about something. You've got my attention.
There are 195 countries, but only 45 countries have a carbon tax. So that means the vast majority of countries don't have a carbon tax at all. And about half of the carbon taxes are under $10 per ton, or about a third of Canada's tax.
Okay. Let me go over this here, make sure we're getting it right. So you just said a less than one quarter of countries around the world have a carbon tax. And most of those countries have carbon taxes that are way lower than Canada's. But here's the thing, a carbon tax only works on a global scale. And that's obvious from the numbers because Canada only accounts for 1.5% of global emissions. It sounds like the carbon tax is costing Canadians a lot of money, but it's not really making an impact in terms of global climate change. In fact, really, according to those numbers, if we had a carbon tax that was huge, say $500 a ton, it still wouldn't make much of a difference on a global scale because other countries aren't coming along for the ride.
Well, don't give the feds any ideas about increasing taxes or hiking a carbon tax up to $500 per ton. But essentially, Canada by itself can't do much to stop global climate change, even with its carbon tax. But you don't have to take my word for it. Even Trudeau has acknowledged that Canadian carbon taxes won't do much for the environment. Here's a direct quote from the Prime Minister. He said, "Even if Canada stopped everything tomorrow and the other countries didn't have any solutions, it wouldn't make a big difference."
You know, that's a really important point, especially when the overwhelming majority of other countries don't have carbon taxes or carbon taxes that are way lower than Canada's. How is this supposed to work?
Well, it gets even worse because Trudeau just increased the carbon tax by 50%. And the feds are increasing the cost of living during the COVID-19 health and economic crisis, while other provinces and other countries are reducing their carbon tax costs.
Okay, so that's getting really frustrating because the carbon tax is hitting Canadians harder than it's hitting most people around the world, obviously. But it's even more frustrating because Ottawa's carbon tax is hitting some Canadians harder than other Canadians. Break that apart for us. What is going on with that?
Well, the feds increased the carbon tax by 50%, but Newfoundland and Labrador froze its carbon tax rate below the federal rate. BC Premier John Horgan, well, he decided that a global pandemic isn't exactly the best time to increase carbon taxes, and he halted his planned increase. The Manitoba government also delayed its plan to put in a carbon tax, and Quebec companies are actually paying a significantly lower carbon tax due to the COVID-19 shutdown.
Okay, so that's going to make some people frustrated. If people in Saskatchewan and Alberta have to pay a higher carbon tax than Canadians in Quebec, that's gonna increase the old blood pressure rate for people. Explain how that's working.
Well, Quebec has a complicated carbon tax system. The government sets the amount of emissions, then companies can buy and sell what's called carbon allowances. And this is known as a cap and trade carbon tax. Normally, the price of these allowances stay above $23 per ton. And that's the usual carbon tax rate. Well, that price has fallen to as low as about $17 due to COVID-19. And we need to remember, Canada's carbon tax increased to $30 per ton during the economic crisis. So Quebec's price fell to almost half of what Albertans or Saskatchewan taxpayers are paying.
Yeah, and I can tell you, Canadians across the country need relief from taxes like carbon taxes. And things are particularly tough in Alberta, where the economy is getting hit with multiple tough times, particularly in the energy sector. But you said the taxpayers in other countries are getting carbon tax relief as well. How does this look around the world?
That's correct. We're seeing carbon taxes go down. The European Union, they have a similar cap and trade carbon tax system as Quebec. And their carbon tax rate has fallen dramatically, more than 30% during the economic crisis.
Okay. Now, If I recall correctly, the European Union has one of the largest cap and trade systems in the world. So that means that many European countries are getting a break on their carbon taxes, while Canadians just saw a 50% hike in their carbon taxes. That's a bit tough to swallow.
It is tough to swallow because there are 30 countries that are under the EU's carbon tax cap and trade system. So that means there's 30 European countries that have seen lower carbon tax burdens because that EU tax rate has decreased. But there's also some countries that are doing even more to provide relief. We've heard Estonia's finance minister. He wanted his country to consider leaving the EU's carbon tax scheme. And he's also lowered fuel and electricity taxes to provide relief during the COVID-19 crisis. Let me read you a direct quote from Estonia's finance minister. Due to the economic downturn, both people's incomes and the revenue of companies are declining, but daily household expenses such as electricity or gas bills still need to be paid. To better cope with them, we are reducing excise duty rates on gas and electricity for 2 years.
Making it easier for people to pay their power bills and heating bills, that sounds like a reasonable thing to do while everybody's struggling. But that's a really stark contrast to what's happening in Canada, where the finance minister here jacked the carbon tax. But that's Estonia. What's happening in the rest of the world?
Similar to Estonia, a Polish minister is also calling on the EU for tax relief. But it's not just Estonia and it's not just Poland. Norway lowered its carbon tax rate on natural gas to zero. And that Norwegian carbon tax won't be increased to the pre-coronavirus levels until 2024. Then there's also New Zealand. New Zealand's cap and trade carbon tax rate has fallen by more than 20%. Then there's South Africa, who has pushed back its carbon tax payments for 3 months.
During the corona crisis, many countries around the world, and even many provinces, are trying to help out by reining in the carbon tax. And again, Ottawa jacked it up by 50%. Obviously, here at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we're working hard to fight the carbon tax. Tell folks a little bit about what we're up to.
This is one of our biggest fights because the carbon tax really is all economic pain without environmental gain. And we're taking the fight to the Supreme Court. So we're going to be the only non-government intervener fighting against the carbon tax and standing up for taxpayers at the Supreme Court. There are going to be dozens of other organizations on the other side, like the David Suzuki Foundation. And we just got the word that the Supreme Court will be hearing the case in September, and we know we're going to be there.
Yeah, and we've had some success. We were involved in the Alberta Court of Appeal challenge to the carbon tax. We won that one. So you know what? I mean, you never know what's going to happen in a court fight. We're actually feeling pretty good going into the Supreme Court. We're hoping to beat the Trudeau carbon tax there. But of course, we're fighting this on all fronts. We've got a petition at taxpayer.com to call for an end to the carbon tax. Head on over there and please sign that. And you can also find out more about all of this. This is just a quick discussion, but Franco's put together a pretty good report for the Gas Tax Honesty Day report. Every year we talk about how many taxes are on your fuel bill. Head over to taxpayer.com and you can see that as well.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Sorry for interrupting the podcast, but I wanted to take a few seconds of your time to tell you more about the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. We are 235,000 Canadians from coast to coast that are fed up. We are fed up with politicians taking too much out of our paychecks, often to waste it on a bunch of pet projects, corporate welfare, and pork barreling to buy votes. We organize campaigns to push back on these politicians. These campaigns often include petition drives, billboards, media stunts, and more. But most importantly, they ask our supporters to pitch in and take action. Alone, we're a voice in the wilderness. Together, we're an army to be reckoned with. You can join the fight and sign up at no cost at taxpayer.com. That website again is taxpayer.com. Okay, now back to the podcast.
It's time for Waste Watch. This is when we make fun of the dumb things governments are spending your money on. Todd, what do you have for us today?
All right, Chris, have you ever had a subscription to a magazine or something that you've totally forgotten to cancel?
Yeah. One time I signed up for one of those family history site things, and it actually took me months to get it canceled, cost me a bunch of money. I had forgotten all about it. I felt pretty silly.
You know, don't feel too bad. The government does exactly that kind of stuff too, but usually when it's at the government level, it's a bit more expensive. So come with me back in time. Back in 2015, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, just formed government, names his cabinet, but he decides to stop appointing regional cabinet ministers. So before that, some cabinet ministers would kind of have double duty. So for example, the fisheries minister might also serve as a regional minister for Nova Scotia and get a fancy office in Halifax. But Prime Minister Trudeau, when he took over, he said, heck with that, we don't need regional ministers. So he stopped appointing them.
You know, when you think about it, elected members of parliament and premiers provide plenty of regional representation. So we can probably do without the regional ministers.
Yeah, so that makes sense. I don't think too many of us have lost a lot of sleep about the fact we don't have a regional minister anymore. It's not that big a deal. But here's the part that really does not make sense. The prime minister got rid of regional ministers, but he didn't get rid of regional ministers' offices.
What? That kind of sounds like a dentist office without a dentist.
Or a doghouse without a dog. But there's 16 ministers' regional offices all across Canada. So when the prime minister first ditched the whole regional minister's idea, a spokesperson told the Winnipeg Free Press that offices would stay open even though there weren't regional ministers anymore. Here's what the Treasury Board guidelines say, quote, "The offices function as business centers for all cabinet ministers, parliamentary secretaries, and staff when traveling in the regions on government business. They are equipped with offices, boardrooms, and kitchen facilities. Ministers often host stakeholder meetings and press conferences at the minister's regional offices."
You know, if only there were some kind of an establishment that could rent out rooms at a needed daily rate with business stuff like Wi-Fi and printers, I don't know, like a hotel.
Right. Hotels. It's easy enough to find a spot for a press conference. Just phone any hotel, they'll set you up. But the Treasury Board, it also talks about making sure the facilities can handle top secret communications, emails, make sure that they've got secure phone lines and a whole bunch of stuff like that.
You know, it's hard to believe that you would need 16 offices fully staffed year-round just for that. There are such things as secure cell phones. We've seen cabinet ministers doing video conferencing during the COVID-19 situation. I'm sure if NORAD were on the phone, the defense minister would be able to somehow find a way of taking the call across Canada. The decision to get rid of regional ministers happened just after the 2015 election. That was quite a while ago. There's been plenty of time to shut these things down.
Yeah, yeah. More than enough time. I don't think it took you that long to ditch your subscription to the family history site.
No.
But here's what's actually happening. Nobody else is watching this. Nobody else in the media is covering this. But our investigative reporter, James Wood, he decided to double check on this. You know, it's been 5 years. What's happened? He found out the government hasn't shut down the minister's regional offices. In fact, we haven't had regional ministers for 5 years, but every day, those bureaucrats are going to the office and keeping those ministers' regional offices open even without regional ministers.
This is starting to sound like that subscription I forgot to cancel, but it's sounding like it's going to be a heck of a lot more expensive.
Yeah, you're going to want to brace yourself here. So James dug up the documents showing these ministers' regional offices will cost taxpayers about $3 million in 2020. And we have to give a lot of credit to NDP MP Charlie Angus. He demanded a breakdown of the expenses for these offices. The documents were tabled, but nobody was bothering to look at them until James dug them up. So good thing he was there. But these offices have burned through somewhere in the ballpark of $15 million for regional ministers' offices that don't have regional ministers for 5 years.
You know, that could pay for a heck of a lot of secure cell phones and hotel conference rooms.
Yeah, you know what else $15 million could pay for? I did some quick back of the envelope math, and $15 million would probably pay the whole federal income tax bill for everybody in Viking, Alberta for more than a year.
I'm pretty sure the good folks in Viking could find a better use for their money than 16 regional ministers' offices without regional ministers.
Yeah, our investigative reporter, James Wood, is digging deeper into this story. He's filing access to information requests. We're going to get more on this, so stay tuned. He's also posting a story with links to these documents on taxpayer.com. This is a big waste of money, and we're going to get all the way to the bottom of it.
Thanks for listening to the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast.
And thanks to James Wood, he's the guy who edits out all of our mistakes. And if he put that out instead of the podcast, it would probably be longer. So thank you to him for taking care of all of that. And to all of you, thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe, like, share, review our show. It helps us get the word out. And tune in next week.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. If you've got another minute, I'd like to ask you to think about the one person you know that would really enjoy listening to this podcast. Do us a favor and do them a favor and send them a quick note to let them know about it. At the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we believe there is power in numbers. That's why we've worked so hard to build an army of taxpayers who are ready to push back. And we did it because people like you shared our work with that one person that they knew would really appreciate taking part. Thanks for listening. And thanks for doing your part to make Canada a better place.